Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and I am joined today by definitely one of our legendary American Kennel Club judges, Lydia Hutchinson. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And so one of the things that we like to do on the show is we call it giving the 411, giving your background, how you started in dogs, why you started in dogs, when you started in dogs.
Right.
Because I think it's important for our listeners to understand our judges weren't hatched from an egg, right? You guys came to this because of a mutual passion for dogs.
Absolutely. Yes. And I was not quite born into it, but my parents were given their first Cairn Terrier 2 months before I was born.
Oh, my goodness.
And she was, you know, a pet, but they let her have one litter, mm-hmm. and they kept a female from that litter, mm-hmm. and bred her one time to an English dog. And from that, they kept a male puppy that some friends of theirs who were boxer breeders said, you know, that puppy is very good looking. He has promise. You should try showing him.
Wow.
So they did when I was about 9 years old. They started showing that dog, and I started going. The first dog show they ever went to with him, and I was fascinated. I haven't never looked back, you know.
It was, and that was in?
You really want to know.
Give us a date.
1949.
Excellent.
Yeah. And he became a champion, and then they bought a bitch for me to show, and that's all she wrote. I mean, we are kind of now the not only the senior breeders of Cairns in this country, mm-hmm. but very successful, I have to say.
Yeah.
Just this year, I've already finished two of my bitches, and that makes, we're pushing 270 champions.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and almost all of them, with very rare exceptions, have been homebred.
That is very
and
impressive.
Some of them are ones we've sold to other people. Mm-hmm. But the ones we've kept for ourselves, we've shown ourselves. My mother was very active as an exhibitor, and I took it up very young.
Right.
So it's fun to come to Westminster.
Absolutely. Here we are. You were stewarding all day today at the garden.
Today, yes. And I have judged there 4 times.
Excellent.
And actually, someone said, well, you must have shown in junior showmanship at Westminster. I said, well, actually, yes, I did. And I went 2nd 1 year.
Oh, my goodness.
So,
wow.
Yeah, I never was a professional handler. I've always
right. I thought you always were just very focused breeder. As a breeder and owner
That's
handler.
Right. You know, I watched the standard poodles today because that was the other breed that I had as a teenager.
Now, that's something I did not know.
Well, not too many people do. And a lot of the newer people in poodles don't know that I'm a poodle specialist, and I've judged PCA 4 or 5 times.
And, wow.
Yeah. I've judged poodles in England, and I've mm-hmm. judged them in Sweden and in Norway. And
that's awesome.
I was very fortunate to be trained by Miss Kelchner, Ruel Kelchner, who had the leading kennel of miniature poodles at the time, Hollycourt Kennel. And because I was too young to be paid a wage,
right.
she let me choose any puppy I wanted after the first year I worked for her. And so I picked a miniature poodle puppy, and she actually went winner's bitch at Westminster years
oh my
ago
goodness.
With me showing her. So, yeah, I have a love for poodles, but it wasn't fair to my mother when I went off to college to have to maintain any
keep up the poodles.
Poodle cuts and, you know, and the clipping and the brushing and everything.
Right.
So I stopped
right.
with the poodles, except one original Hollycourt bitch. Mm-hmm. She was with me through my marriage and everything mm-hmm. until she finally died. But the Cairn Terriers have really been
my very breed. Much what I associated you with.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Right. Yes.
And so you are still actively breeding Cairns right now.
Yes, I am.
I love that.
Yes. And I think, I mean, just for myself, I like to still be active in both at, you know, the judging and the showing.
Right.
You do have a sensitivity for the exhibitor that you might not have if you haven't shown a lot of dogs yourself. Yeah. You understand, you know, dogs can have bad days like people can have bad days or the work you've put into getting your dog competitive right. form. And also being an exhibitor, you kind of, you're still on the grooming areas and you kind of, you see things that are going on.
Right.
Maybe you wish you weren't seeing.
Maybe you wish you didn't know that.
Yeah. I wish I didn't know about that. Yeah. But it keeps you on your toes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Keeps you young.
Yes, it does. It very much keeps you young.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So what about the Karens do you love the most? What is your very favorite thing about Karen carriers?
I love their adaptability.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when people come to me who aren't familiar with the breed, you know, that's one of the attributes I tell them. They make a very good city apartment dog, if that's your lifestyle. But, they love to be out in the country and hunt, too. And so they manage to adapt very well to their environment.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I love their alertness and their independence.
That's such a kind word for it.
Well, they always say that dogs reflect their owners. The owners reflect their dogs. And I think of myself as a bit of an independent spirit.
Yes.
So, you know, I can see why. It wasn't my breed of choice, so to speak.
Right.
You know, that's what my parents had. I inherited. But we click very well together.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband loves them. He grew up just with outdoor hunting dogs. You know, they were never house dogs or anything and grew up in the South. But he's very keen on our kids.
Mm-hmm. And so Karens aren't as, like, entry-limited numbers as a lot of the terrier breeds are. Like, I was just talking to the Sealyham ladies.
Right.
But talk to us a little bit about building the types of pedigrees and the type of family of dogs that makes, what'd you say, 270 champions?
About, yes.
I mean, that's an impressive record. Mm-hmm. How do you build those pedigrees? If our listeners are starting breeding dogs or a little bit into breeding dogs, what's your suggestion about how do you build that family of dogs?
Well, we didn't start kind of in the traditional way, you know. The advice that you normally get is to buy as good a bitch as you can from a well-known breeder who will be your teacher, your mentor, and work from there. And that's not kind of how we started, because we started with a male. But what I think the success for Wolf Pit Cairns has been is that Miss Kelchner taught me a lot about line breeding.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not something that was practiced in the 1950s and 60s when we were kind of getting our bloodlines going and well known. But that always appealed to me.
Right.
So I've always used the pedigrees as my guidelines, but in the case of dogs that we've bought from overseas, and we've imported just a few, two from Scotland, one from England, and one from Sweden, I have seen, either had my hands on or watched the parents and grandparents of most of those dogs. And I've been fortunate to travel over there.
Right.
Now, that's not possible for everybody to do that. But I feel very strongly that a lot of times they won't sell you their very best ones. You know, and you can understand that.
Right.
And so it's very, very important that you know the dogs you're dealing with, the bloodlines, and what's behind. So basically, I have practiced line breeding most of the time, but by bringing in these imports and combining them with our own dogs.
Okay.
And especially, it's always been bitches that we've brought in.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. So you bring the bitch line instead of going and getting the sire line. Okay.
Yeah. And then in mind of what one of my stud dogs I'm going to use with that particular bitch. And it has clicked, really clicked.
Nice.
And people say to me, you know, you've got the magic touch about doing that, about combining it, because once you bring the new blood in, then I go back to what you've been working with.
Yeah.
All right, crew, I just found out some very cool stuff. I learned that Trupanion has a breeder support program. And Trupanion is medical insurance for dogs and cats also. And I always want to give you guys the coolest new information. So I have here with me Haran Greer, who is the senior account manager at Trupanion. Met her when we were up in Enumclaw at the Olympic Kennel Club show and really had just a cool visit. So I thought you guys would enjoy hearing from her a little bit. So hey, Haran.
Hey, Laura. Thanks for having me. It really was nice meeting you at the dog show. The Trupanion Breeder Support Program partners with ethical, responsible breeders across the U.S., Canada, and Puerto Rico to get puppies and kittens covered from day one of joining their forever family. What we do is we create a certificate for each breeder that joins that program, and then the breeder gives that certificate to their buyers. And if they want to take advantage of it, the new owners activate the certificate 24 hours before until 24 hours after taking their new pet home to try us out.
I just think that is so cool. And now, if I do this for my puppy buyers, there's no cost to me. Is that correct?
You're correct. There's no cost to the breeder whatsoever. We create the certificate. We will send you the seasonal starter kits for your take-home folders. Those starter kits include what a new owner can expect in raising a puppy, seasonal advice and hazards, as well as more information on Trupanion. Also, throughout the year, we have fun promotions where we send out puppy blankets so that the puppy can go home with their mom's scent. So essentially, they can go home covered in Trupanion.
Which I just think is totally cool. And you see this, right? Like, you see claims coming through that this is actually working.
Yes, it's not uncommon at all to see claims of broken bones, foreign body ingestion, and other surprises that come with raising a new puppy or kitten. What it ends up being is just simply peace of mind for the breeder and the new owner by ensuring that the owner can give their pet the best care without being tied to financially based decisions when the unexpected occurs.
And I think that is amazing because in our society, everything has a cost. And as breeders, we're able to offer that service to our puppy buyers. That's peace of mind for us. It's peace of mind for them, right?
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. I take care of my people. So now you guys have heads up on this very cool option. If you want more information on joining the Trupanion Breeder Support Program, check out the show notes. We'll have a link in there. Or you can go directly to trupanion.com/breeder and make sure that you mention you heard it on Pure Dog Talk. And we're back to the podcast.
And so those four times that you went out for bitches, what were you looking for? What specific, did you want a better head? Did you want a shorter back? What was your thing you were looking for?
Well, at the time, I mean, this expanded over a number of years mm-hmm. because the first one my parents bought. And that was pure happen chance. A good friend of theirs had brought over two English bitches, and she only wanted to keep one of them, and so she offered the other one to my parents. But it turned out she was very, very well bred, and it worked very well for them. But more recently, what I was looking for were really good coats. I want to improve the coats on my dogs. And my dogs have very strong in certain areas. Mm-hmm. I have very good heads on my dogs. Mm-hmm. I have good mouths. Very strong rears in my line of dogs. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the front assembly could be better mm-hmm. and improved. And mm-hmm. so, you know, I was looking for that.
Always something to strive for.
Right.
I feel you.
Right. And we're seeing some style changes in Cairns now. Okay. And I'm trying to not go over the top for size. The size mm-hmm. is increasing quite a bit over our standard, actually. But there's a fine line for me where I will go just so far. And,
right. Because you guys have a weight limit?
No, we have a suggested weight and a height.
Yes.
And they're very concrete numbers.
Right.
But there's no DQ or...
Okay. All right. So, but keeping that basic size and shape, just like any other breed, that's super important to what a Cairn is.
Right. So. Right. Yeah, exactly. Here's an example. I have a litter of three males now that was from frozen semen of a dog of ours that was a successful dog. He won our national specialty in 2003, and he was the Westminster winner in 2003. And this is from frozen semen from him.
Right.
And putting that pedigree together was so beautiful because the mother is the litter sister of my dog who was the top Cairn in the country in 2015, and she's a very typey, smaller bitch. And it turns out that Charlie, the sire of the litter, is also twice in the mother's pedigree as a great-grandfather.
Okay.
So it's a very interesting...
And on both sides? Top and bottom?
Well, he's the top.
Okay.
But on the bottom.
Is it on both sides on the bottom? Just curiosity, because I'm doing a similar kind of thing right now.
Yes, I think he is, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's one of my favorite things. Uh-huh. I just literally last week on Wednesday did a frozen semen breeding that's the same basic concept.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And I still handwrite out my pedigrees, and I know that's
my mother did
old-fashioned.
My mother did the same thing,
but it helps solidify the pedigrees in your mind.
Absolutely, as you write it and write it.
Yeah, and when I was writing this one out, I was saying, "Hey, this is fantastic! This is so much fun!" You know, and I've been showing the pedigree to people who've known some of my dogs in the past,
right?
Because it was like a walk down memory lane.
Sure, it is, and I agree with you. I enjoy those kind of bringing back some of that old genetic material that we can kind of expand the gene pool, even when you have a breed that's not as narrow as some.
Right. So I'm going to keep one of those boys.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, that's very exciting. Go on from there. Yeah.
That's very exciting. So here's another topic that I think is very important. And I was just talking to the Sealyham gals.
Yes.
And I've talked to a couple other people, owner handlers in the terrier group. It's a tough group, very competitive with handlers, very competitive, a lot of trimming, a lot of, you know,
conditioning,
all of that. And I hear from people that they feel that owner handlers have a hard time, or maybe don't get a fair shake from the judges. What's your thought on that?
Well, Cairns were almost 100% owner-handled breed for a long time. I think the whole trend towards emphasizing competition for best of breed has changed that. And I can understand it in a way, because there's so many shows now and they're all clumped together. I personally don't want to show five shows in a row and then have a day off and then show another five shows in a row.
That's a lot.
I have other things in my life besides just going to dog shows. So I think in the classes, owner handlers, as long as they know what they're doing and have their dogs conditioned well, they have a really good shot. But for owner handlers to win best of breed in heavy competition, they have to have a top-notch dog. Yeah. You know,
hey, you did it for how many years?
Yeah,
so
right. But the most recent ones that I've had that have been special extensively and ranked very high were with handlers.
Right.
Yeah. And it was great. I mean, you know, and it was fun because they were great handlers and the dogs really loved it.
And that's a lot of hard work. Speaking as a handler.
And traveling, you know, I'm specialing a bitch right now that's very, very nice, but I don't plan to be out every week with her.
Right. Yeah. This is a wonderful, wonderful topic for me. I've had this conversation actually with Pat Trotter. She and I have chatted about it. I don't know that we did it on the podcast, but she and I have actually just personally spoken about it. And the sort of discussion with judges and judges showing dogs, and everybody has an opinion, right? Is it a good idea? Is it a bad idea? And I love what you were talking about, that it's keeping you sort of
Pat
in the game.
Well, Pat and I are on the same, in the same wavelength on that. I mean, we've talked about it for years. I've known her for many, many years.
Right.
And I have the greatest admiration for her.
Who could not?
She's showing a dog she has to run with. You know,
exactly.
I don't have to. I'm showing a breed that I don't have to get down and kneel with, and I don't have to.
You got the best of all worlds, man.
Well, no, they're not the easiest breed to show. They're not like wire fox terriers that always stand there with their tails up and their ears up and or smooth or whatever.
Cairns,
you have to work with
Think about it. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And the trimming on a Cairn isn't quite as intense as a lot of the other breeds. So.
I call it achieved naturalness.
I like that.
Because they're supposed to look very natural and a bit rough and tough. You know?
I know there's a lot of work that goes into the achievement of that naturalness.
Exactly. Everybody in the Cairn world knows that I prefer showing a dog in really full coat, longer coat than many of the handlers are doing it now. And some of the breeders, too, are showing them a very tight,
almost
neat,
in
short
a jacket.
Coat. Well, no, longer than that. But, you know, I keep more coat on my dogs than a lot of people do. And I'm going to continue doing that because, to me, that's the way they're supposed to look. They're not supposed to look too neat and tidy.
Absolutely. Okay, so you showed all your family and you showed dogs. When did you start judging?
Actually, a long time ago.
Yes.
I started judging in 1964.
Wow.
When I was pregnant with our second child.
Oh, my gosh.
I was 7 months pregnant when I judged my first
show. Your first assignment.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, right. And I've asked around, you know, a lot of people over the years, have you ever seen any judge who was obviously pregnant? Or have you ever shown under any judge that was obviously pregnant? And not one person.
I can't.
Ever
I can't think of one.
Yeah.
Cannot think of one.
So what is that? 64, and this is 2018. So 54 years I've been judging.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. I know.
And I love it, you know.
So. That is the important part, is that you love it. And I interviewed Ginny Line, one of my first interviews, and she was so excited because she was going to reach her 50th year. And I just love that. And I love that in this Legends series, we're getting to talk to people that have that much knowledge, that accumulation of knowledge.
And I seriously mean it when I say there is not a dog show that I go to that I don't learn something. That is a fact. If you're using your eyes and asking questions of knowledgeable people in a breed you're not that comfortable with or familiar with, you're going to learn.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I'm always curious to learn new things.
I hope. We all are learning every day, right?
We do hope that.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so you were stewarding for toy breeds today.
Correct.
And what did you see that you liked? I mean, I know the greatest part of being a steward at the garden is you get to see all the cool dogs.
Well, they keep you so busy when you're stewarding, though. It's hard to watch unless it's a large entry and you can finally sit down after you've
organized all your ribbons.
Oh, yes, exactly.
Yes.
Well, there was a beautiful long coat chihuahua, Bitch.
Bitch.
And she was in the classes. She was in open, and she won the variety.
Oh, my gosh.
And she caught my eye right away. I found out she's the best in show winner in Japan. And
oh, my goodness.
And I guess she won yesterday, too. After
progressive
the fact,
or something.
Finding all that. Yeah.
Right.
And I can tell you a funny thing. My fellow steward, one of the things you have to give out is all these Purina certificates to go collect rabies. And I had neglected to put the one for winner's dog with his ribbon and everything. So I said to my fellow steward, I said, we'll have to make sure that dog gets it. And he said, well, I'm going to put it here by the best of winners ribbon. Maybe he's going best of winners. So I walked over. I watched the two, the winner's dog and winner's bitch. And I walked over to him and said, that winner's dog ain't going best of winners.
Oh, my goodness.
No, because that bitch was just
that beautiful.
She really caught my eye.
Awesome.
So that was fun to see, you know, one totally unexpected from another country.
Well, you've been judging for 54 years. What is the best part of it? It's got to be seeing these kind of dogs.
Yeah, finding the fun dogs you've not experienced before. Yeah.
Right.
I guess that was the highlight of the stewarding today.
Excellent. And so what are your future plans for breeding, for judging? Do you have any fun places you're going?
Actually,
you've judged all over the world.
Yeah, I have some fun places I'm going this year, and some of them have just developed in the last week or two.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Well, my husband's going with me. I'm judging in Alaska.
Yes, that'll be fun.
And, yeah, I've been there one time, but not to the part we're going. And so we'll do a little sightseeing on the side. And then I'm going to be judging in Milan, Italy.
Oh, very nice.
That's nice. That terrier show they're going to have there. And then the most recent one is I'll be going to Japan.
Okay.
In the fall.
Excellent. Yep. And now, what are your groups that you judge?
Well, in addition to the terriers, I do the toys.
Right.
And the herding group.
Okay.
And then poodles.
Okay.
And giant and standard schnauzers.
Okay.
And
I didn't think you had the whole bunch of everything. I
know
you didn't do spoiling.
I've always been very specific about feeling I need to have a relationship with a particular breed to want to judge them. I mean, I could have expanded.
Sure.
I could, you know, with my background, I could be an all-rounder, but I never, ever had that desire because I wanted to keep my hand in with the breeding and showing myself, too. So
I like that.
Yeah. You know. So I'm very happy with what I do. And with the new judging system, people are quite upset about it, and they asked me what I think. I said, well, I'm sure it's not ideal, but it doesn't affect me because I don't plan to apply for any more breeds. I'm happy.
Not my circus, not my monkeys. Isn't that how that goes?
Yeah, something like that. Oh my gosh.
All right. Well, thank you very, very much. I know you're tired. You have a long day.
I'm not tired.
That's impressive.
No.
I'm tired.
No. You've probably worked harder today than I have. You know, there's something about this sport of dogs that is very energizing.
Mm-hmm.
And now, my mother was a spark plug, too. And so, you know, people are always just saying, you're so amazing, Lydia. And it's just, I guess, I love life. I love my dogs. And I have many, many close you know, intimate friends through the dog, the sport of dogs.
This is your family.
Yeah. Well, I have a wonderful human family, too.
Yes.
3 children and 5 grandchildren.
Oh, my goodness.
And a super husband. We've been married 57 years, and he's put up with my passion all these years, my dog passion. So I'm not tired. I'm looking forward to tomorrow, Terrier Day.
Terrier Day, yeah, absolutely.
I debated about entering a dog this year, and I finally decided not to because I would have done it myself, and it's very difficult now, you know.
Yes, the layout, I think, makes it very, very tough.
Well, the last time I showed when Charlie won in 2003, I stayed at the Pennsylvania in the tiniest room possible.
Known to man.
1 twin bed and, you know, barely room on either side of the bed to get in and out. I was up at 5:30 in the morning. We had 9 a.m. judging. I was trucking across 7th Avenue by myself, you know, lugging a crate. And I guess I didn't even take a grooming table. I think I just took a mat that I could put on top of the crate. Yeah, to groom him. And that was years ago, I guess. And I don't think I need to do that anymore.
No. I think probably more than anybody needs.
You know what I thought?
If there certainly is magic that is the garden, though.
Yes. Yeah, that's for sure. And you see a lot of people you only get to see once or twice a year.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for joining us.
I had a ball.
The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our Dog Show Superintendents are the hardworking people who make the Dog Show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the Supers desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.